Welcome back to Soar Financially. Welcome back to the channel where we discuss the macro to understand the micro. And today we'll discuss charts, a bit more technical today, because I'll be joined in a few short seconds here by Gary Wagner. He's the CEO and producer over at the Gold Forecast. You probably came across his name because he produces a lot of gold commentary on a daily basis, actually. A lot of great content. And I couldn't believe it. I last had him on the channel 7 months ago. No idea why it took so long to bring him back. Fantastic guest. I always love chatting with him. But before I bring him on the screen, make sure to hit that subscribe button. It's somewhere down there. I don't know. YouTube keeps moving it. So just go and find it. Really appreciate it if you hit that. And now let me bring Gary on the screen. Gary, it's great to see you again. Thanks so much for joining us. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you. And it is great to have an interview with you again.
Yeah, it's been way too long. I couldn't believe it when I saw it was 7 months. I don't know why time flies, but a lot has happened since and a lot for us to go through and chat about. Because last we had you on last, as I said, 7 months ago, gold was extremely volatile. We barely touched on 1620 around that time per ounce. And now we're trading near all-time high levels. Let's recap. What happened, Gary?
It did move much higher. It moved as anticipated, but it was not sustainable. And so the question really becomes, why wasn't it sustainable? And why do we have gold at that area and higher now and seems to be sustainable? And I think the basic answer to that is that the undertones that are moving gold higher now did not fully exist then on a couple of areas. Secondly, 7 months ago, when you would ask the Federal Reserve, when are you going to cut rates? When are we going to see interest rates go down? They would say, we're not even talking about that. And of course, in December, Powell said that we've discussed that and we're planning on cutting rates over the next 3 years, 0.75%, 2024, and so on. So those are the key differences. And the geopolitical landscape is different.
Absolutely. Yeah, you brought up Powell. I've said it in other interviews before. My audience probably is sick of it as well. But I was surprised how aggressively dovish he was and how clear he was in his language. And the market said, well, you said three, let's turn it into six rate cuts in 2024. And of course, the day after, one of the Fed presidents came out and said, we didn't mean it that way. You know, rate hikes are still on the table. Is that what you mean by undertones sort of that stopped the rally in gold?
Absolutely. And I remember watching the interview on CNBC of the Fed official you're talking about. His words were, we're not even discussing rate cuts. And I kind of, my daily video, I said, really? Because Powell specifically came out and talked about rate cuts. And then when you looked at what's called the SEP, which is a summary of economic projections, which contains a dot plot, the vast majority were calling for rate cuts. Now, there were only two of, I believe, 18 members or 17 members that did not see rate cuts as something feasible this year. And I'm assuming, because though that's anonymous, I'm assuming he was one of those two.
Absolutely. It would make sense because he came out quickly and backpedaled in official capacity, which really stopped a rally in the main markets and also the rally in the gold price, like right in its tracks. Yes. So really took the wind out of its sail. Let's talk about that a bit more. Let's talk about the Fed policies. Like, what do you expect, Gary, to happen? Are you more in the three rate cut camp? Are you more in the 6 to 8 rate cut camp? Depends on the source, of course, you want to listen to. I'm curious, what your projections tell you?
Well, my projections are based upon the dot plot and what Chairman Powell said at the last press conference. We're not going to hear from them again to a great extent till the end of this month. That's when the next FOMC meeting concludes. And Powell came out and he said the median dot plot, which is where the majority of Federal Reserve officials believe it will go to, are anticipating a total of 3 rate cuts this year, 0.25% each. Currently, Fed funds rates are between 5 and a quarter and 5.5. That would take it, you know, down 0.75% to the 4.5s, 4.25 area. I have to believe that what the Federal Reserve put in the dot plots, and more importantly, what Powell said, is what they're anticipating. But he also hedged that bet and always throws in, we are data dependent. And should the data support not doing those rate cuts or having a rate hike even, we are going to be quick to act. And so I believe that they're going to stay on track as long as inflation's trajectory continues to show a slow and steady decline, which brings up, I believe it was last week or a week and a half ago, the most recent CPI, which actually showed upticks in core and headline and came in fractionally above economists' forecasts.
Yeah, 3.4%. Also in Europe, in the Eurozone, the inflation ticked up again. The question is now, inflation feared, like a lot of analysts predicted, we'll see a rebound in inflation. It usually is like a sinus curve, but more aggressive, more compressed. So like, okay, we see the 8-9%, we go down, and then we explode higher, we come back down, and then that usually happens in three waves. Do you agree with that, or is that just a, let's call it an anomaly?
An anomaly. Well, here's what I would say is the most important data point that came out since the CPI. On the following day, the government released the producer price index. Now, that is usually a precursor to what inflation pressures are going to do, because if it costs more to produce something, that's inflation, and that will typically get passed on to the retailer or the distributor, which will then go to the consumer. And that actually showed a small contraction. And so based on the PPI not also showing a increase in costs, because if it did, I would be in the camp of looking for inflation to start ticking up maybe. But because it did not, I would say that our next set of inflationary reports, the PCE and the CPI, will come in closer to the estimates and also show that it declined a little bit. It's not moving higher.
Gotcha. Okay. Interesting. Okay. I haven't made that connection. So that's interesting to hear. You mentioned undertones for gold, and we're still recapping a little bit what happened in 2023. Maybe we can bring up the chart here as well, because Gary, I'm trying to understand like what really drove the price of gold higher in 2023. I'm having a hard time believing it was just geopolitics and safe haven investing.
Well, there is the over-optimism of the Federal Reserve action this year. As you just mentioned, the vast majority of Fed funds futures traders, and this is based on data from the CME's FedWatch tool, is looking for interest rates to come down much more, not severe, but much deeper, let's say, than the anticipation of three rate cuts. And market participants have been overly optimistic. And that is not a new thing. They always want to think that there's going to be more and it's going to be quicker. But in terms of what we've seen this year, I don't believe it has been all geopolitics, but I think that the tension on two fronts, the Middle East as well as Russia and Ukraine, have not been going away. And I think that that's the scary wild card. But let's leave that for the last thing. I think the first thing is going to be Federal Reserve action, because as they bring down interest rates, that creates bullish momentum, bullish undertones for gold. But at the same time, inflation going down creates bearish undertones. So there's kind of a push-pull there. But I think overall, it's going to create bullish undertones. The other thing is whether or not the BRICS countries who are trying to use their currencies and kind of not to stabilize the dollar, but take it off of its throne as the central currency that the world transacts business with. And when you look at that and oil, that is being challenged right now. There was an agreement signed by Iran and Russia that they would do their trading of oil in their local currencies. And I think that if BRICS gets a strong foothold with the countries that are there and more countries, and they've got, you know, some very large countries, including China and Russia, that could challenge the dollar as the dominant world currency. If that happens, we could see the dollar lose value as it relates to other currencies. And so that's one thing that we want to look at, because that will have an influence on the price of gold. The second thing is the Federal Reserve, and we kind of touched on that. And the third thing is geopolitics, because what started back in October 7th has only spiraled. And now the question is, will that spread from a regional conflict to involve more countries? And we just saw that happen last week with a coalition of the United States and Britain attacking, I believe, 60 targets in 17 areas or 12 areas. And that's worrisome.
Absolutely. As you said, like, and it drove the gold price higher over the weekend as well. Like, it was an immediate effect on the gold price. But unfortunately, like, history has told us that geopolitical gold prices are usually not sustainable.
Absolutely correct. I tend to call it when a country's doing what we call sable rattling. So we've had all kinds of dogma out of North Korea. We should annihilate the U.S. We should make sure it's, you know, that kind of talk might have a temporary spike in gold, but it won't be sustainable. And what is a quandary to me is, take, for example, the conflict in Ukraine after being attacked by Russia. That's in its second year. And if anything, from the reports that we see, and, you know, I take all reports on the news with a grain of salt because there's going to be an element of truth, but depending on the source, I don't take it as gospel, let's say. That's still going and actually accelerating. They're using stronger weapons, bigger missiles. And so it seems as though the public has a short memory for actions like that. And when they go out of the news cycle and they're not as reported as intensely as they were on the onset, then people begin to discount that. And so that's one of the reasons when there is geopolitical skirmishes, you get a spike up and then it quickly comes down. It becomes an unsustainable move. I think this year could be different. I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. But it's where I am deriving my target for where gold could go to this year.
Shall we take a look at the chart, Gary? Because one question I have for you is also, is $2,000 the new floor? And how stable is that floor? Is it made out of cement or is it really just sheetrock?
It's definitely not sheetrock. Months ago, I looked at 2000 becoming a major level of support rather than resistance. We've seen it dip below that a couple of times, but recently, definitely since October, and in October, we had gold sitting at about 1840. It moved up. It came down a little bit. You can see that on the chart. And if I move my mouse, hopefully the audience will see it. But this is what I'm calling the October move here, which started right at these lows of about 1840. It then moves up to about 2035, and it does dip below that to about 1954. Then we had this spike in which we saw it rise tremendously on Friday, although it closed at 2093. That's our highest close on record. And this, of course, is futures data. And then beginning in Australia, so Sunday for us on the mainland, it actually spiked to 2153, but by the close of New York, was back down to 2043. And that was one of the wildest whipsaw markets I've seen in a while. But since then, if you look at the most recent low, which occurred Monday, December 11th, it comes in right at around 2000. So I think that A, there is solid technical support for gold at 2000. Is it concrete? Let's say that it's unbreakable paper. Because if the right fundamental events occur, it would just go through it like a hot knife through butter. However, if the basic fundamental fabric that we're looking at now maintains to a large degree in the same way, I think that 2000 is the new level of support and it will maintain that.
Absolutely. Let's shall we do a bit of forecasting there, Gary? Where do you see things headed in 2024? What do the charts tell you? given, you know, the mix of circumstances we've just discussed as well?
Well, as you can see, I've done a couple of things with what's called Fibonacci extension, because whenever we're trying to forecast highs that haven't shown up yet, we as a technician, we can't go back and look at historically where it is. But we do have this one high. And this comes in above 2150. I've drawn channel lines, so to speak, from these series of lows and these closes here and here. I believe that gold could trade as high as $2,200, $2,250 per ounce this year. Is that sustainable? Well, history has shown that any large spike, and even if you go back to the middle of 2011, where for the first time in history, gold broke above $1,920 or above $1,900 to an intraday high of about $1,920. Well, how long did that last? I believe it was about a day. You know, it came down very sharply. What we saw last year was any move to about 2,000 and above was a signal to short-term traders to short the market and bring it back down. That's not going to change. Anytime we see gold make a new high, we're going to see that get challenged. It just, that's how that market tends to work. It's how most markets tend to work. But I think that right now, what I would look for is 2093. Now we're sitting at time of this recording at about 2060. So it's not a really big stretch to go, well, it'll go back to 2090. The thing is, we've got, what I like to look at is, will it do that on a closing basis? And so on a closing basis, I see the challenge being first moving up above 2100 and then 2150, which is where that one spike came in, and if that's going to be sustainable. So I think that we've got a solid floor at 2000, all things being equal. I think that we could see it spike much higher, and I'm expecting it to spike higher. One, based upon the dollar, because the dollar was exceedingly strong last year, moving from the lows below 102, 103, up to 107. And now that's not the highest we've seen it in recent history. We've seen it at 114, but it moved from 107 back down. It's at 102. And that's a 5% decline in the value of the dollar as it pertains to the currencies it trades against.
Gary, just following up on the chart we had, and maybe I'll bring it back on here as well.
Okay.
Do you also correlate that with the volume? Because we see the green and red bars below your chart. Is that volume in future contracts traded?
That is futures volume. What you have to understand is you have to take that with the understanding that in futures, it goes by contract month. This is what's called a continuous contract, now tracking February, which is why if you look to the left, the volume is so low. There wasn't really any volume in the February contract. It was in the contract that came before that. So now we're getting pretty normal volume. And I think that we'll see the volume coming in and stay at this level and move higher. Of course, if you look at the end of the year, you had traders going on vacation, being absent for the new year. And that's where we saw these declines that came in at the end of the year. And now it's just starting to build back up. And we're starting to get strong volume and strong participation by traders.
Interesting. One thing I was looking for, Gary, as well, is trying to figure out when the generalists are coming back into the market. You know, future traders are usually the more professional traders. It's not the generalists. It's not the people that buy an ETF or an ETC that's gold-backed. Do you see any indication of them coming back at all?
I don't feel comfortable answering that because I don't have the data to give you an answer that's based on anything but conjecture.
Gotcha. No, fair enough. No, I appreciate you saying fair and square. It's like, okay, we don't have that data because I'm just trying to find that correlation, and maybe it's a glimmer of hope as well, because as I was asking about the follow-up buying, and I think if we would have had some more generalists in the market, maybe that follow-through might have happened.
Right. Well, one thing that I can say that addresses that question, and it's an excellent question, Kai, and that is that people tend to lose interest in buying gold, whether it's through ETFs, physical, or trading in the future, when the price is going down. So we have seen a slow and methodical kind of stair step up. We're in that stair step right now. And the fact that it's remained above 2000, it spiked as high as 2150, that's going to get the public interested again. And that should lead to more general buying, as you put it.
Yeah. Like one question, I think I discussed that with Lobo Tiger at the New Orleans conference. I think one question was, what would get the generalists interested again? And I think you sort of answered that. I was hoping personally it would be the all-time headlines, the all-time high headlines. Lobo back then mentioned maybe a $50 a day move in gold. We've seen that, but it hasn't really brought back the generalists. They didn't care.
I don't think so much, and this again is conjecture. I don't think it's that they didn't care. It's that they said, you know, I've seen that before, and it didn't last. And so it's the fact that historically speaking, the big price moves have been followed by rapid declines. And so when you look at the first big, large price move, it moved for multiple years up to 1900. I mean, we're talking a 10, 12-year period. Once it got there, it broke down. And then for a year and a half to 2 years, I believe, it traded between 1800 on the high and about 1550 on the low. And it kind of bounced back and forth. And then it broke through that. That break took it to the lows. This was February 2015 of 1020. And I remember that month and that date because that's when George Soros started buying a lot of it. And I said, that's telling me maybe it's time to get back in. That is the low.
Interesting. That's a good, interesting side note there. Fantastic. Gary, I'm trying to make the segue to silver. And I think the best way to do that is via the gold-silver ratio.
Okay.
We need to talk about that because it's still very, very high. I think we're trading around 85. I'm not, maybe 85, 86 gold to silver or silver to gold. It's still extremely high, and silver seemingly has decoupled from the gold price. Usually they go up in tandem, they go down in tandem. Of course, silver usually more violently, but that chart has decoupled. Let's jump into that. Let's discuss that, Gary.
Yeah, what we're looking at is just a silver chart. And to the point that I want to illustrate is, whereas we've seen gold on a slow and methodical climb, when it would hit a new high, it would come down, but it would trade to a higher low. Although we're seeing that in silver, one thing that we have, all of us have noticed that follow silver, is that silver made a high of about $50 when gold traded to above 1900. But since then, on all these subsequent new price highs in gold, we didn't get that follow through in silver. And so silver ceiling has been $30 rather than $50. And so that's a question that has been a quandary. It's been a difficult question to explain rationally. Volume is good, but it still seems as though silver is range bound. There's a ceiling right now, short term, at $26. So when gold, again, when gold spiked up, because these are occurring at the same dates, this is, if we look at it, this is October, the low. So I call it the October rally. This is the spike that we saw when gold hit 2150, and the high that we got in silver was 26. So we got a new all-time high in gold. Intraday, wasn't on a closing basis. We also, the day before that, got a new all-time closing price. That's what's important to me, 2093. But when you look at silver, it didn't really have that kind of momentum that we saw in gold. That's what tells me that when we want to look at the gold and silver ratio, I think that gold is going to overtake the performance. Although on any given day, you can have silver move up strategically and aggressively, but the same thing occurs when it comes down. But the key is the levels are different. And so as many analysts have said, and we've all noted, there's been a decoupling between the tandem moves in gold and silver. Silver is much more sensitive to U.S. equities, to global equities, because of its high level of usage in industry and technology. Gold most recently has been most sensitive as a safe haven asset. We saw a decline last year going to a couple of lows based on the fact that there was over-optimism with the Federal Reserve and the data wasn't supporting it and comments by Fed officials weren't. But ultimately, I believe that it will widen in favor of gold.
It seems like silver's become Dr. Silver a little bit as well. It's like, I don't want to name it that just yet, but it seems like it's also caught in the recession fears, and the recession seemingly is priced into silver, hence the decoupling. Would you agree with that statement?
I think that's an excellent point. Excellent point, because if a recession is on the horizon, and whether it, you know, there's a great expectation of a soft landing. There are those out there that are saying that's not going to be the case. But silver is very sensitive to how economies are doing and how industry is doing, because it's so tied to industrial usage.
No, absolutely. Sorry, Gary, I was just checking my notes here just to make sure I got everything covered here on the silver side as well, because it is an interesting market, because the usage in solar and EVs is just exploding, especially solar photovoltaics. So I'm calling it the new, let's call it Dr. Silver. Might as well trademark it right now. Let's start making t-shirts.
Good to me.
Yeah, you can buy probably in the store down below, and we'll get that going. As a good YouTuber, we got to have a merch store. So
there you go.
Trying to think, Gary, I think we covered gold, silver extensively. Do you see any black swan events that could completely derail your forecast? Is there anything that, I wouldn't say gives you sleepless nights, but maybe keeps you up a minute longer than you want to?
There are a couple of things that make it troublesome to fall asleep at night, and they're black swan events, but we're all aware of the possibility, and that is that the tensions now in the Middle East move from being regional to having a lot of countries involved, and that being an issue with me, because that would take gold and to spiral higher and maintain that level until that was resolved. But it's the amount of geopolitical tensions in this world that keep me up at night. And the problem that I have is that I don't see any end games, any real solutions. If you take Russia and Ukraine, their goals couldn't be more polarized. Russia is committed to taking back the country that they believe was theirs and was at some point during the Russian Empire. True. Ukraine is committed to keeping their independence, because they are Ukraine and they are Ukrainians, and they're not going to give an inch to that. So where's the room for compromise when you have polarized opposites in terms of their end game? And when you have that kind of a fracture, it's very difficult to know what will happen without a really catastrophic event. As far as the Middle East goes, you have a lot of groups that, from what we read in the news, are proxy groups of Iran. They're being supplied by Iran, funded by Iran, and weapons are being given to them by Iran. And so they have been hitting targets in the South China Sea, and this is specifically in Yemen. There's also a radical group in Lebanon and Syria. And I think that could be the black swan event, which I pray doesn't happen, which is more involvement globally by a lot of countries creating a coalition. And that would be catastrophic.
I think we can all agree on that nobody wants that spiraling out of control, because Iran, to a degree, is backed by China, because if we start hitting oil refineries in Iran, China will get involved as well, because they're getting some of their oil supplies out of Iran. So it's when it spirals completely out of control. But as you said, like, what are the solutions? None of the parties is willing to back down. So,
and that's the trouble I have with it's what, where's the end game? Even if the two sides are exceedingly rational and want to find a peaceful solution, their concept of what it would necessitate is North Pole and South Pole. And how do you meet in the middle when there is no middle ground that either side would be happy with? And it's the lack of endgame that scares me, or a plan of compromise.
Absolutely. Gary, we got to end on a positive note. I think we got to reiterate your gold price target for this year. What was that number, Gary? We got to leave on a positive note here.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I think that gold is going to go to a new all-time price high on a closing basis. Right now, the bell to beat is 2093. What I believe will happen at some point this year is not only will it move back above 2100, on a closing basis, but then form a base, trade sideways or to higher ground. But actually, I'm looking for the pivot when 2100 is the new 2000, meaning there is a strong support for that. And when you consider where gold has come from, even recently at the 1800s, we've seen a tremendous move. And I think that there, in terms of investment opportunities, is incredible investment opportunities in the precious metals this year.
Fantastic. Gary, fantastic closing note. Couldn't have said it any better. It was great to leave on a positive note here. Really appreciate your time. Where can we find more of your work, Gary?
Certainly, thegoldforecast.com. That's our website. We have a YouTube channel which has over 3,000 videos. We've been posting there since 2009. Every single daily video that I've done has been posted. Of course, the live ones are for premium subscribers, but they get put onto the site. I believe the delay time is roughly 2 or 3 weeks. And lastly, on Twitter, it's at Gary S. Wagner.
Fantastic. Gary, wonderful conversation as always. It's great to see you. We're not going to have 7 months pass again before we chat again. So we'll bring you back sooner for sure. Thank you so much for your time, Gary. Much appreciated. Mahalo. And we'll chat very, very soon. And everybody else, thank you so much for tuning in. Truly appreciate everybody's time and patience and interest in our channel. Thanks for getting educated. I think it helps everybody become a better investor. Make sure to hit that subscribe button, hit that like button, leave a comment. Do you agree with Gary's gold price target? Do you think it's going higher? Do you think it's going lower? Let us know. How are you playing the gold market right now? And what's your Black Swan event prediction? Let's not be too grim in the comments, but let's be realistic as well. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'd love to hear from you. We'll be back with lots more, and some of you I'll see in Vancouver this week. Thank you so much.